Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go on a Thursday. We're packed. Live in Los Angeles, this is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, 1 hour from now, Greg Cosell will break down all four playoff games. What's the tape say about Seattle, Green Bay, Kansas City, Baltimore out there, San Francisco Vikings, Kansas City and Baltimore. I like both those teams to roll this weekend, so Greg Cosell is going to break them all down. Good to have you in. Joy Taylor is joining us. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. I'm very excited for this weekend.
So am I. So I actually feel like three of the teams, the favorites this weekend, San Francisco, Kansas City, and Baltimore, the three favorites that I really like this weekend. Seattle, Green Bay, it's a coin flip. I want to start with this, though. Dallas Cowboys have a new head coach. It's Mike McCarthy, who sort of looked uncomfortable wearing a suit, didn't know what to do with his hands. But when we think of Mike McCarthy, we think of Aaron Rodgers, right? Because it's not that Aaron threw him under the bus, but Aaron got tired of him. I get it. Sometimes a coach, you're worn out. McCarthy looked like he couldn't coach, tossed to the side. Mike took 95% of the hit. But Aaron Rodgers yesterday said he was happy for Mike, his old coach, getting the Cowboy job.
We've had a lot of success down there, and I know that I think that that was probably one of the reasons. You know, we've obviously won Super Bowl there, but we've won some big games down there over the years. So I'm not surprised that, Jerry had an infatuation with Mike because, you know, we've had some really good performances. I thought maybe he would go somewhere where he had maybe some GM opportunity as well. But I'm happy for him. I sent him a text. He sent me a text back.
You know, here's the thing. We look at the Dallas Cowboy job, and we say it's kind of dysfunctional. But ask yourself this. What are the best jobs in the NFL organizationally? Pittsburgh Steelers is number one. They're patient. They draft well. They're top to bottom, they do everything well. They treat their employees great. They'll go after free agents. They never play cheap. They develop players. They draft them. And they don't fire coaches. They are the most patient franchise. Pittsburgh's number one by a mile. You know who second is? There isn't one. It depends on who your quarterback is. There is no second best structural organization in the NFL. Green Bay? Free agents don't want to play in Green Bay. Green Bay doesn't have an owner. I want my team to have an owner. I can go to the owner, Robert Kraft, and say, get rid of Garoppolo. Can't do that in Green Bay. They don't have an owner. Small market, feels collegiate, a lot of free agents, not interested. Oh, New England. Wasn't a great organization before Tom Brady arrived. Nobody thought in the Steve Grogan years it was a great organization. It's a great organization because Tom Brady showed up. What about Denver? Not recently. Legendary great Pat Bowlen passed away. You don't know what's behind that. They're recycling coaches, going through them, quarterbacks, coaches. Elway, a legend, could be in trouble. Well, what about Kansas City? It's solid. Not a lot of championships. Stable, small market, not that attracted to free agents. Well, what's a great job? The Dallas Cowboy job, or any job in the NFL, not named the Pittsburgh Steelers, is as good as your quarterback ceiling. The Cowboys' job is as good as Dak Prescott's ceiling. Right now, if Andy Reid retired, Kansas City is a great job because of Patrick Mahomes. It's not a great job because it's Kansas City. You know, Aaron Rodgers, of the eight new coaches in the NFL this year, one made the playoffs, Matt LaFleur. Why would that be? He's got Aaron Rodgers. So Dallas is fine. You have great resources. They spend money. They never go cheap. Free agents want to play there. You know, no state tax. Great place to live. Right now, they've got a very good offensive line, a star running back, a star wide receiver, two unbelievably athletic linebackers, a great edge rusher, and Byron Jones. Can they pay him? I'm not sure, but a top corner. It's a great place to live. It's a great organization. yes, the owner, we kind of normalize his behavior. He talks after games. Well, you're not going to have as much say in personnel. Frankly, not every coach wants to be in the war room nonstop. A lot of coaches like to coach. Belichick's an exception. He wants to control everything. Mike Holmgren tried to control everything in Seattle. It didn't work. He went back to just coaching and got Seattle to a Super Bowl. So, you know, we always talk about the Dallas Cowboys and roll our eyes, but the Steelers are the best organization. The city is big enough to be an attractive place for free agents and to live. They're patient. They draft. They develop. They do everything right. Everything right. Outside of that, these jobs are as good as the quarterback ceiling you have. That's why right now the best jobs in the league, I'd love to be Seattle's coach. I'd love to be Kansas City's coach. I'd love to be Baltimore's coach or Houston's coach. It's not because of the organization. It's because the dude playing quarterback. So I'm happy for Mike McCarthy. If he can get more out of Dak Prescott, then it's a great job. For the record, there's 20 great college jobs, maybe 25 to 30 great college jobs. You know, anywhere in the South with all those players, University of Texas, Oklahoma, Wisconsin, Ohio State, you know, the California schools have a chance. They're around good players. Hell, a lot of good college jobs structurally have an advantage over their opponents. Doesn't work that way. Pittsburgh, and that's it. All right, let's talk about Green Bay this weekend. And this is going to be an epic showdown. This is Russell Wilson in Seattle against Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. And you know how I feel about Russell Wilson. He was underdrafted. He's undercovered. He's the most underrated quarterback of my lifetime. Steve Young's probably second. And then there's Aaron Rodgers, who I think is great. And the perception is Aaron's way up here and Russell's way down there. But having been a sports fan since I was 8 years old, so I'm going on over four decades of being a sports fan, here's something I've noticed. I would call it the Paul Bunyan quality. We love the golden arm in baseball. Greg Maddux is a much better pitcher than Nolan Ryan. Greg Maddux has 4 Cy Youngs. Nolan Ryan doesn't have any. Greg Maddux, 18 gold gloves. Nolan Ryan doesn't have any. Maddux has a better win percentage and a better ERA than Nolan Ryan. But Nolan Ryan threw 100 miles an hour and had some no-hitters. So who's the legend? It's not the better pitcher, Greg Maddux. It's Nolan Ryan. The golden arm. It's the same in football. We fall in love and look past the flaws of the golden arm. Joe Namath is the first we did this with. Joe Namath has 47 more interceptions than touchdown passes. He's still a legend. Dan Marino, with Don Shula, with Jimmy Johnson, was sub-500 in the playoffs, got to 1 Super Bowl and lost. John Elway had the golden arm. He was blown out in 3 Super Bowls and then played poorly in 1 of the Super Bowls he won. Many think he's the greatest ever. We overlook the flaws. There's Brett Favre, who led the NFL 3 times in interceptions and had far more big-game gaffes than big-game greatness. And then there's the current golden arm, Aaron Rodgers, who's had 1 great playoff run. And he's stupendous. But that arm makes us overlook some leadership issues, some arrogance issues, players calling him out issues, holds onto the ball too long issues. If you go look at Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers' numbers, since Russell came into the league, Russell wins more, wins on the road a lot more, wins in the playoffs more, the passer rating even, passing touchdowns even, completion percentage mostly dead even. And oh yeah, I like Russell Wilson's leadership and scrambling ability. But the gap in perception is Rodgers up here and Russell Wilson way down here. It's the Greg Maddux, Nolan Ryan. It's the Dan Marino, Favre, Namath, Elway. By the way, spectacularly gifted players. But in my lifetime, if you've got, in your era, in your decade, if you've got the arm, first it was Namath had the arm, and then it was Marino and Elway, and then it's Favre, and now it's Rodgers. Now, for the next 10 years, it's going to be Patrick Mahomes, and we'll gloss over some of his flaws, you know, because it is so pretty to watch. I think it's a huge game this weekend for Aaron Rodgers because I think he and Russell Wilson are largely the same quarterback since Russell entered the league. That's just not perception. And Aaron talked about how much the game matters and how much the last 4 to 5 years of his career are going to matter.
It's on my mind every day. I mean, that's why we play the game. That's why you put in the time in the offseason. That's why you do the little things. It's to put yourself in this position where we're 2 games away from being able to compete for that. I'm 36. I know what this is all about. This is an important opportunity for us. I feel like I got a lot of really good years left, but you never know.
Good stuff. Can't wait for the game. Green Bay hosting the Seattle Seahawks.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So yesterday, Larry David created Seinfeld with Jerry Seinfeld, Curb Your Enthusiasm. Very, very funny shows, iconic shows. He loves sports. Just a short story years ago. I was invited to a dinner right across the street from where I'm sitting, and Larry David showed up because he's friends with Carissa Thompson, who works at the network. They were buddies. And Larry's very funny, and he sat next to me, and I was joking. He kept saying, I think I can be coordinator for the Jets. And I'm like, Larry, you cannot be offensive coordinator. It's a language in the NFL. You don't speak the language. It would take years and years. He's like, no, I'm dead serious. I could be offensive coordinator for the Jets. Well, Larry's very obsessive. He's very funny. He's very smart, and he really believes it. Well, apparently he was on the Michael Kay Show. Good guy, New York Yankee announcer, good dude in New York. And Larry David talked about he loved Lamar Jackson, and he called the Jets general manager in the last draft and said this.
I did call Mike Maccagnan before the 2018 draft, and I recommended that he draft Lamar Jackson. I have a witness.
Really?
Yes, I have a witness.
And what did he say to you when you said that?
He kind of gave me the most condescending.
Really? Wow. Yeah. So you actually told him that?
Yeah, I told him that. He kind of he laughed at me, but who can blame him? Nobody thought Jackson was going to be
except for the Ravens.
Well, time out. Not even the Ravens. The Ravens passed on Lamar the first time they had a chance to draft him and allowed Cincinnati, their rival, a shot to get him. So it's been a shocking, shocking development. Even last year, Lamar played 7 games. He barely passed for 1,000 yards. He only passed for over 200 yards once. He completed like 58% of his throws. He was interesting. He was fascinating. Nobody predicted this. No, the Ravens didn't predict this. This is my least favorite quality of the media. My least favorite quality. 2 words, revisionist history. Folks, Lamar Jackson, let's not feel sympathy. He got drafted in the first round in a very heavy quarterback draft. If you want to feel sympathy for Russell Wilson, who went in the third round. Russell Wilson went to Wisconsin. He didn't have a great offensive coach like Lamar did in college. He completed 73% of his throws, 33 touchdowns, 4 picks, Rose Bowl. At running conservative Wisconsin, nobody drafted him. First 2 rounds. Didn't make a nickel. Seattle DJs made more than Russell Wilson until a year ago. Okay, Lamar Jackson, revisionist history. In the worst conference by far in college football, the ACC. Because usually the ACC, Florida State's good. Now they're crap. Miami's good. Now they're crap. Virginia Tech's top 10 no longer are. It's Clemson and awfulness. And we in that conference with Bobby Petrino, one of the 2 or 3 sharpest offensive guys. Now that Urban Meyer's retired, maybe the smartest offensive guy in college football, top 2 or 3. Lamar completed 54, 56, and 59% of his throws in a horrible conference with a brilliant offensive mind. And he still went in the first round. Of course there were reservations. I mean, I said it before. I called him a project. I think he's going to work in this league. But man, 54, 56, 59% in the awful ACC? Of course people had questions. The Ravens had questions. Lance Zierlein, whose dad was a coach in the NFL, is a scout who I have a great deal of respect for. We bring him on the show once or twice a year. Here's what he said, and this is what, and I was in the Chargers war room the year of the Lamar Jackson draft. This is largely how the Chargers felt. His evaluation was, evaluating Lamar against NFL standards for the position will cause him to come up short. However, he has rare speed and athleticism and can single-handedly win games. Jackson may need to operate in an offense ready to integrate RPOs along with heavy play action. Has star potential. That's what everybody thought. But potential, Nobody predicted this. We didn't see this last year. And what have the Ravens done? They have drafted him. And instead of the Michael Vick career arc, which is people kind of, Michael, you can run and stuff, but we want you to be this. No, Baltimore said, hey, we're going to build an offense specifically tailored to all your strengths. You put him in Cincinnati and a coach pushes back on the running stuff, we may not see Lamar Jackson MVP. We just see Lamar Jackson making cool plays once in a while. So the revisionist history on this is laughable by the media. In the last 25 years in the NFL, you can't find another college quarterback that couldn't complete 60% of his throws in a bad conference with a great offensive coach that became an MVP candidate. It doesn't exist. There's usually a baseline in the NFL. You got to complete 60 to 61% of your college throws if you're going to go to the NFL. I think Matt Stafford was right on the line and be great. So, I mean, I'm happy for Lamar. I think it lasts. I do. People say he's going to get hurt. My takeaway is, well, show me. He never gets hurt. Didn't get hurt in college. Didn't get hurt in the pros. Show me the hurt part. Because I'm not seeing the hurt part. You know, RG3 a year in, I saw the hurt part. I think RG3 got banged up in college too, but Lamar doesn't get banged up. But the revisionist history on this stuff is absurd. Lamar's great. He's a great story. I hope it lasts. I think it will. But there are doubters.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Of the four teams at home this weekend, three of them had blowout wins off of byes. Kansas City, Baltimore, and San Francisco off their bye this year had huge blowout wins. Green Bay off their bye this year got blown out. So I don't know, and this is not a knock on Matt LaFleur, how good of a coach is he? Because I look at the playoffs last year, the year before, the best coaches are winning. I got Andy Reid, I got Shanahan, I got Pete Carroll, I got Mike Zimmer, I got John Harbaugh, and I don't think Matt LaFleur, I don't think he matches up to those guys. It's not that Green Bay is not good. It's just I always judge coaches off like extra time. Nick Saban, Dabo Sweeney, Belichick, Pete Carroll, Andy Reid, Sean Payton, off byes. John Harbaugh are great. Off a bye, Matt LaFleur got blown out. Tennessee's offense is better since he left. And I look at all these coaches left. I could make an argument Matt LaFleur is certainly the least experienced and the least talented coach left. Is he better than Bill O'Brien? I don't know. Is he better than Mike Vrabel? I don't think so. Not what I've seen. Tennessee got better when he left offensively. So I don't know what to make of Green Bay. I guess I take him at home off a bye because they're super healthy.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Brady Papinga, the former Packer, now joining us, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Let's bring him on, a Super Bowl champ, 5 years under Mike McCarthy in Green Bay. So I'm watching that press conference yesterday. Mike McCarthy looks odd in a suit. I will say that. You liked him, though, a lot. 5 years
with
him.
Yeah, I did like him.
Why'd you like him?
Well, I liked it because, first and foremost, he was personable. He was also structured where he had a disciplinarian element to him. So it was like this nice little combination of he could, you know, lay down the hammer, but then at the same time he could be personable and kind of just like shoot the breeze with you. So you had that element of him to where you could be, he's approachable and things of that nature. And I also like the fact that he was adaptable because we talked about this before. When he first got there, he was like a dictator. Like, this is what we're going to do. Like Tom Coughlin. And then over time, when we started 6-2, he basically said, okay, we're going to have to change it up. I need the players' input here because this is a player's game. That's what he'd always tell us. And then ultimately, he's just an overall good guy. You know, he really has the best intentions to go out there and help now the Dallas Cowboys succeed and ultimately achieve what they want.
Now, there are reports that he wanted more personnel control in Green Bay, and he struggled. Ted Thompson, he didn't think, went out and helped him defensively. They had to win by shootouts all the time.
Yeah.
Are you surprised? Even Aaron noted, I thought he would want a little more GM control. Does that surprise you? Because I always sensed the guy that liked personnel decision power.
Yeah, well, I would say this with McCarthy. There was a time where he didn't care. He just would take whoever Ted gave him, and it was working out for us great. But then there came a time, and we talked about this also on the show, where Ted basically made the shift in the philosophy of the team where, hey, we're going to go more offensive-oriented. We're not going to, you know, mess with the defensive side much. We're going to just try to outscore teams.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously there was a time there too where they were just drafting and developing guys every single year. It was like starting over, and Mike got tired of that.
Yeah.
And ultimately too, when Ted kind of got to the end of his tenure there, and then you had other guys involved in the personnel decisions, I do believe Mike felt like he was more qualified to evaluate talent, to bring in personnel than the guys that were in place pulling the string. So I believe that was more of it. But, I mean, come on now. He's going to Dallas. He's not going to have much say.
Right.
And that's why this it could make sense, but I'm telling you right now, principally, this is probably going to be a disaster in Dallas.
Whoa.
Because here's the thing. You got to remember this. And this is what is so interesting about this, is it's really a contradiction because Jerry Jones says, hey, I want an experienced coach. I just don't want a rookie first-year coach. But guess what, ladies and gentlemen? That's exactly what they got with McCarthy, because McCarthy has never been a head coach in a situation where somebody's looking over his shoulder to where he doesn't have full autonomy on play time, who's going to start, because that's exactly how it was in the Green Bay Packers.
And he liked it. More and more he liked it.
Well, he loved that. Like Ted always said it. Ted said, hey, I'll acquire the players. We'll pay them their market value. But after that, it's up to the coaches if they play, if they don't play. Because I guarantee you, if Jerry Jones invests in a player like Ezekiel, you know, like he did this last year with Ezekiel Elliott, and all of a sudden McCarthy finds another runner, let's say Pollard just fits in better with what McCarthy wants to do, who's, you know, the draft pick there they don't have as much invested in, and all of a sudden you see Ezekiel snaps decreasing, I guarantee you Mike McCarthy's going to get a call from Jerry Jones saying, hey, what's going on? I just paid this guy X amount of dollars, $50 million guaranteed. He needs to be on the field. McCarthy's going to be like, whoa. I've never had to deal with this before. What do I do? Because he never had to deal with that. So the ironic part of this whole thing is McCarthy has never been in this situation. So, in fact, Jerry Jones got a coach that's inexperienced dealing with an owner that is going to be so involved in football operations like Jerry Jones is.
So you had playoff games in Green Bay. The difference between regular season and playoff games at Lambeau, just take our audience to the different preparation, the intensity, the way you feel and sense as a player.
Well, I remember the division round. We played the Seattle Seahawks, and it was 08, but the 2007 season. And you just ran out of that tunnel into Lambeau Field. It was so palpable, tangible, the energy just of the fans. And it just – right now it's bringing chills down my spine, man. It is an unbelievable experience because that's what the Packer fans live for. Heck, that's what every fan base lives for. Packer fans, though – are just a little bit different. They're special because they are so invested in the team. You talk about them being shareholders, and then ultimately when they go to the game, Packer fans don't go to the game because it's a spectacle. They go to the game because they literally believe that they can have an influence on the outcome of the game.
And those kind of fans are dangerous.
And they're phenomenal. That's what makes them so fun. And so when you go to a playoff setting in Lambeau Field, you know that everything has been heightened. The energy, the expectancy to win.
Did you feel pressure?
I felt good pressure. Like, this is what we all want. This is what we're here for. And let's go do it. And I'm going to tell you, I mean, when you're in playoff football and you know that if you don't go out and make a tackle, you don't go out and, you know, do certain things. And the New York Giants game kind of pops in my head because I had a fumble at the end of the game that popped right into my chest. And it was so flipping cold. I jumped on it. The ball popped out like wet soap. And then Dave Tollefson for the New York Giants, I'll never forget him because he was with the Packers, jumped on it and recovered. And that would have won us the game. So it's kind of like you have to go out and execute almost perfect. You have to take advantage of every opportunity because it literally could lead to, if you don't, being eliminated, not being, you know, in play the following week.
I think Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson are about the same quarterback. You disagree strongly with me.
I just don't get it. Like Russell Wilson, I have never seen anybody that is so propped up to where everybody wants to see him be this elite quarterback. And
you
I get
like
it. He's
him.
A good guy. I love Russell Wilson. I think he's phenomenal. I love how he is so humble and spiritual and all those kinds of things. I just look at him as a football player, and he still is a function of his surroundings. He's not a guy that can go out there and basically say, okay, I have no running game. My defense is a brand new bend, don't break, but mostly a break defense and still cover up all those weaknesses. He's not at that point right now. Now, that can change. You know, he could go
Did
into
you
this
ever
game
face him?
I did actually. Faced him twice.
How'd you do?
Check that. I did it because I was with the Rams and I faced Tavarius Jackson.
So you've never faced him?
I've never faced Russell
Okay,
Wilson,
that's like saying Houdini's overrated, but you never saw a show.
Well, the bottom line, though, is I've seen the guy enough when he plays and I've seen how he reacts when all of a sudden everything comes on him. And I haven't seen him raise his game, especially in big-time playoff games, to the point where he says, oh, fine. Well, I'm taking over. Offensive line, you're struggling to protect me. Fine. I'm going to get the ball out quicker. We're going to check to some quick game stuff. I'm just going to take over. That kind of – I haven't seen that yet. That kind of play.
Here's what would worry me about if I'm Green Bay. I don't love our offensive line.
You don't?
I think I have said this for years. The Packers in Wisconsin always have good O-lines.
I'm shocked right now.
I don't think the Packers O-line's that great. For the first time in 10 years, I look at him and I'm like, I saw him get overpowered by San Francisco. I saw him get overpowered by the Chargers. I saw him get pushed around by the Eagles. Those are good defensive fronts. I think the Packers O-line is if you start looking at Baltimore's defensive front, Kansas City, Seattle, Minnesota.
I'm not worried about Seattle's as much. But yeah, I get where you're going with this.
You like what worries you about the Packers? A minute left. What worries you about them?
Inconsistencies. I'll never forget when I went to the Washington Redskins game and I saw them control, dominate the first quarter. And then after that, it was a crapshoot as to what kind of team was going to go out onto the field and play. A team that could execute at a high level consistently or a team that was going to go out there and kind of fumble around. And
what is that, by the way?
A loss of focus. That's all it is.
Not coaching?
Well, no, coaching's part of it because coaches are meant to keep teams focused, keep teams engaged. Leadership has to jump in. But I'll tell you what, the last two games to follow up the season, the Packers played, in my opinion, two of their best games in two very challenging situations, one against Minnesota in Minnesota, and then that Detroit game. Don't discount playing against a team that has nothing to lose with you having everything to lose.
Brady Papinga, great seeing you, Brady.
Always good to see you, too.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Bucky Brooks, a former NFL defensive back scout, helped build the Seahawks and the Panthers playoff rosters, is joining us on NFL Network as well. I said to you, I said, okay, there's four favorites at home. Seattle's favored. Kansas City's favored over Houston, Baltimore's favored over Tennessee, San Francisco's favored over Minnesota. I said, if there's one underdog, because we're going to have an upset this weekend. We are. I said, give me the upset. And you said?
The Minnesota Vikings. I would be really, really cautious if I'm the San Francisco 49ers approaching the Minnesota Vikings because they are a very talented team. They're a team that has a Super Bowl caliber roster. They can win on defense because they have hunters up front. Danielle Hunter, Everson Griffin, their linebacker core is outstanding with Barr, Eric Kendricks. And then offensively, their ability to control the game with the run while also being able to attack and generate points in the passing game off play action to Thielen and Diggs, they could give the San Francisco 49ers problems. Also, because they're experienced, they've been in the playoffs.
Yes.
2 years ago, they went to the
games.
They went to the championship game. The San Francisco 49ers haven't been to the playoffs in a while. And even though they have some individuals who have played, the entire team has not been there. So when you play a playoff game, one, you have to get used to the speed and the intensity of the game being much faster. It's a more physical affair. It is one where the kind of win or go home mentality brings a different level of urgency. And sometimes it takes a while for young players to adjust to that. And so if this game is tight going into the third quarter and fourth quarter, you just wonder, do they have the wherewithal to handle the pressure that comes along with it? And then also you have the Jimmy Garoppolo factor. How is he going to perform in his first playoff start? The game speeds up. Can he settle in really, really early to kind of play like he played in the regular season? I think this is a game where Kyle Shanahan's opening script, the first 15 plays, he has to get his quarterback settled and comfortable really, really early so he can play like the Jimmy G that we've seen.
Green Bay, Seattle, just because the line, Fox Bet, is -4, so that's a kind of a field goal game. I don't think Green Bay's offensive line. I think they've done a very good job developing and drafting offensive linemen, but I don't love their O-line this year. Sometimes they don't get the push. I think they were overwhelmed by the Niners' defensive front, the Chargers' defensive front, at times the Eagles' defensive front. Those are good defensive fronts. And Seattle is a great run-stopping team, not much of a pass rush team. I worry about Green Bay because off their bye, they were blown out. Kansas City, San Francisco, Baltimore off a bye, blew out teams. I don't know if Matt LaFleur's great. I have concerns about Green Bay. They're 13-3, and they don't have a really impressive win since September 15th beating the Vikings.
You know, it's a tough team. This is what I'm worried about with the Green Bay Packers, and it comes down to two words, commitment and trust. Will Matt LaFleur be committed to running the ball? The team has been built to run the ball, to play complementary football. The defense has played well by generating turnovers, and they've been able to win using that formula. Can he commit to running the ball, and will Aaron Rodgers trust Matt LaFleur to stick to that game plan? What typically has happened in the past for the Green Bay Packers, Aaron Rodgers has had to do everything. He has had to be the magician. He has had to kind of do Herculean-type stuff to get them to advance. This year he hasn't had to play like that, and they've won. And the playoff game, is he patient enough to stick to the script if the game starts out slow, or do they get to a point where he throws it 40 to 45 times? If the Packers are winning, they're playing the right way, I think his pass attempts are probably between 30 to 35. If it gets north of that, the Green Bay Packers are not playing the way they want to play, and I think it makes them susceptible to lose to a Seattle Seahawks team that is used to being in this environment. Remember, they've played more one-score games than anybody this year.
Yeah, Seattle's in tight games all the time.
Tight games all the time. And so if I'm Pete, the way I'm thinking, I want to slow this game down. I want to run it. I want to drain the play clock. I want to make this a fourth-quarter game. I want to get to the point where we're within one score in the fourth quarter, and then we play 15 minutes to win it all. If they get the game to that point.
With no pressure, by the way. House money, Green Bay, big favorite. Supposed to win.
And it's hard sometimes to win at home because the anxiousness and the anxiety from your home fans thinking, oh, my gosh, we're the favorite. We're supposed to win. It seeps into the sideline. So everything that you want to do if you're Pete Carroll and the underdog, you want to keep this game as tight as long as you can to get into the fourth quarter and see if the Packers can hold up against the pressure.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to be kind of the general manager here on two questions. So let's start with Brady. You're a team. You're the Chargers. You're Carolina. You can't get the quarterback you love in the draft. And here's Tom Brady. He's available. Here's Teddy Bridgewater. He's available. So we know Teddy and Tom can play. Tom's got the greater resume. Teddy's much older, younger. Tell me, if you were a general manager, would you be at all interested in Tom Brady?
Man, it's really hard because, Colin, last year he fell off the cliff. And I know we can make every excuse about the supporting cast and those things, but in looking at the tape, we saw things from Tom that we had never seen. Typically, if Tom had an open layup, he always knocked down the layup. If he had an open mid-range jumper, he always knocked it down. This year, more than most, we saw him miss things that he had never missed. Against the blitz, where Tom has been surgical for the last 3 years, he fell off a cliff. Passer rating of 67.8. Completion percentage was right around 37. That's not what he normally has done. The 3 years prior to that, his completion rate was over 50.
What about Gronk? Is it a Gronk factor?
I mean, like, obviously he didn't have the most talented supporting cast around him, but from watching him play, he wasn't on the mark. So now, can a 43-year-old quarterback turn it around? We've never seen a quarterback at this age play. We talk about George Blanda. But outside of that, we've never seen a 40-plus quarterback play at a high level and kind of rejuvenate it. I just don't know if Tom can bring it back. If he goes to a situation, man, it has to be a ready-made situation where he can kind of do the Peyton Manning thing, where his mind, his leadership ability, those things are the best assets that he brings to the team and that he shows the team how to be a professional, how to be a champion. I just don't know on his talent alone if he can upgrade a squad.
I think that's totally fair. Let me ask you about this. So I've bounced around the country and I've started over like four times. And when you start over, I tell my wife, this next 9 months to a year, I mean, it's going to be – I am a laser on the job because you're rebuilding stuff. What I can't have is drama because that will just – it just punctures your momentum when you start a new job. So Matt Rhule's going to get the job here in Carolina, and he's an aggressive guy with an aggressive owner, and they've got the 7 pick. They don't have to give up multiple number ones to move to 3 to potentially get their quarterback. I would move – now – listen to his reaction, because he knew when he got the job and he flew there, he was going to be asked about Cam. Mm-hmm. Now, he's not a dumb guy. He's on the private jet. Like, first question is going to be about Cam. So here is Matt Rhule's answer on Cam in the future.
I had a chance to talk to Cam yesterday, and I have the utmost respect for him and what he's done. And I love the way he talked to me, to be quite honest. Now, he didn't want to talk about the past. He wanted to talk about the future. And so but other than that, I would much rather talk to those guys and kind of get a feel for not just Cam, but all the players on the roster and really have a good process moving forward for the entire roster.
Okay, so it's non-committal. Mm-hmm. Knew it was coming. My argument is, if his quarterback was Mahomes, Rodgers, Russell, Lamar, Matt Ryan, 7-8 guys, he'd be like, ready to go. Instead it was, well, I don't want to commit. My takeaway is this. When you start a new job, if you retain Cam, it's going to be 12 months of Cam questions. That's a lot of drama for a new guy. I run the Panthers. I make picks. I get to the number 2 pick. Washington's not taking a quarterback. I get to the number 2 pick.
Yeah, I mean.
Am I nuts on that?
No. You're not nuts. I love Matt Rhule. I love what he's been able to do at Temple, then at Baylor. He understands how to turn around a program. He has a very clear vision for how he wants his teams to play. He believes in toughness. He has a level of adaptability where he will take the best system to put his players in to enable them to win. I think what he did was brilliant in terms of being non-committal. He didn't say, hey, Cam is out. He didn't say Cam is in. I think what he wants to do is really look at Cam Newton and what Cam Newton has been the last couple of years when he's been on the field and healthy, and then assess what is coming in the draft this year and next year. Everyone wants to move off of Cam because Cam is making $19 million. But when you really look at the $19 million cap number compared to what Jared Goff is making at 35, compared to what Russell Wilson is making, it's really a very, very affordable number.
Yeah.
If he does nothing and just keeps Cam for a year while drafting his quarterback, he could very well do what Kansas City did with Alex Smith and Pat Mahomes. Just because Cam is on the roster, it doesn't prohibit the Carolina Panthers from finding their quarterback of the future. I think he wants to give himself every option until he absolutely has to make a decision. And he really doesn't have to make a decision until very, very late in the process.
By the way, Mike McCarthy pressure with the Dallas Cowboys, you make anything of it?
Look, man, I like Mike McCarthy with the Dallas Cowboys. And I think he has been underrated. And I really think he's been disrespected in terms of what he is as a coach. The success that he had with the Green Bay Packers. Look, prior to the wheels falling off at the end, here's one of the top coaches. It was Belichick, Tomlin, Mike McCarthy. Those three were the most winning during that span. He's won a Super Bowl. He's won double-digit wins multiple occasions. And he did it without ever having a top running back.
Yeah, but it should be noted, he didn't have many great defenses either.
No. So he did it with that. And I think what people need to realize, because – we've heard a lot about Aaron Rodgers being a transcendent talent. But I think people forget when Aaron Rodgers came in the league, those first two preseasons, the Green Bay Packers didn't know if he could play. Mike McCarthy did a lot of groundwork with his quarterback school to build Rodgers up to being the player that we respect and see as one of the best in NFL history. He understands how to develop quarterbacks. He also understands and has an affinity for the running game. We were together when I was a player at Kansas City. He understands how to play smash mouth football. He will be fine in Dallas. He is ready for the job.
It's interesting. When you take a year off from somebody, somebody gets fired and the optics are bad. And, you know, it's like art. We appreciate it more. You know, the artist dies and 10 years later, the painting's worth more.
Yes.
And I think with Mike McCarthy, time away from the sport did him well. He kind of got thrown. I'm not blaming Aaron Rodgers, but he was made out to be the incompetent, you know, not progressive. And it's like, and then he used all the right keywords. I've been studying analytics. In the end, his resume is pretty darn impressive.
His resume is very impressive. The people that he's worked under, the stuff that he has done
individually.
Yes, I know him. Look, he was together in Kansas City, and Anyone who has played under Marty Schottenheimer, coached under Marty Schottenheimer, the one thing that you value is the ball. When you look at the turnover rates, the Green Bay Packers rarely turn the ball over. Where do you think Aaron Rodgers got the affinity for not turning the ball over? Mike McCarthy. Because when you turn the ball over, the odds go through the roof that you're going to lose the game. So he's going to retain possession. So some of the sloppiness that you've seen from the Cowboys in the past, he'll eliminate that. They'll play clean football. He will run the ball. He will find a way to use multiple tight ends. So they have to upgrade the tight ends. But this Dallas team, he'll take what they were and just enhance it and tweak it. And they'll play really good football. I think he is going to make them a really, really dominant team in time. And I think he's going to do wonders for the quarterback. The quarterback will continue to improve. He will get better. But the team will be run through. The running back, something that we've never seen him have the luxury of having, a big-time all-star running back.
Here's the Jones family. You ever met Charlotte, by the way?
I have not.
Sharp as a tack. She did. The kids are all smart. Now, Jerry's kids are bright.
Look, it's a premier franchise. I also think his experience, McCarthy's experience in Green Bay, it won't be too big for him. All the stuff going around with Jerry and the brand and America's team, he'll keep the main thing the main thing. He'll focus on the product on the field. You will see a much better version of the Dallas Cowboys going forward.
Bucky, good seeing you, man.
Thanks.